Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Okay, we're going to turn our attention to the use of painkillers in sport because there's been quite a reaction to Brian O'Driscoll's comments last night when he spoke about his relationship with painkillers over the latter years of his career in particular. There's some really good stuff up on offtheball.com from OTBAM where Kevin Caban was in. They spoke to Ross Tucker, to Dr. Barry O'Driscoll to get their opinions on it. And also on the Keith Andrews show today, they spoke to Stephen Reid, the former Republic of Ireland international, and he was asked about how bad his experiences with painkillers became.
With mine, it got that bad that even no matter how many anti-inflammatories or painkillers I would take, it got to the stage where I was having my knee drained weekly, so probably wouldn't train. If I played on a Saturday, I often wouldn't train sort of Thursday, Friday. Possibly have my knee drained on the Thursday, train on the Friday, and then play on the Saturday, because the anti-inflammatories, no matter the strongest vulturizer I had were 100 milligrams, I think they were. Mm. But even that wasn't enough to get all the swelling off my knee at the time. And that's when, you know, if you remember my last three games for Ireland, probably my best games for Ireland, I then had to get the major knee surgery to try and sort the problem out once and for all. It helped it, no doubt about that, but still, the last few years of my career, it was, you know, every other day, and probably the main time for me would be the night before a game. We'd have a strong anti-inflammatory, you know, to try and settle the knee down overnight. We'd still have to ice my knee the morning of a game and then have an anti-inflammatory before the game to get out there and try and get through it. But it was still a knee that was swollen constantly for 5 to 6 years of playing.
That is Stephen Reid. Really interesting stuff. You can check out the full interview on the Keith Andrews show on offtheball.com right now. We're going to talk to Michael Meehan and Enda McGinley in a couple of moments about the GAA aspect of this. But really, the conversation started last night on Wednesday Night Rugby. Brian O'Driscoll was alongside Joe, and he was very honest when talking about this. He was asked if stories about the use of painkillers that have recently been told by Jacques Berger, Andrew Combs, Lewis Moody, were relatable to his own experiences in rugby.
The final one, I would have been privy to that, where I'd have been part of teams where on the way to a game, a doctor would have walked down the bus on the way to the game and inquired as to who wanted what in advance of it. For me, for the last couple of seasons, anyway, would have been part of, you know, my match prep would have been a Diphene and a couple of Cocodamol.
What would they do for you?
Again, just a painkiller, just if I was carrying something, that it would just... do you know what? It almost became like habit, where it gave me a fighting chance if I wasn't feeling 100%, that it might have levelled it up. And
which might have been most of the time.
Which was probably a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And that is the reality of it. And
if you...
I wouldn't have been the only one doing that.
Yeah.
It was usually the older players, just to try and get you, you know, balance the equilibrium almost of feeling okay.
Mm.
And then I'm sure at times without, you know, in my subconscious I would have taken it because it became part and parcel.
Mm.
Where maybe I could have done without it, but again, you know, if it's perfectly legal and, you know, there's no need for TUEs,
yeah.
Or any of that, you know, like, yeah, give yourself a chance of playing your best game.
So it was almost akin to your glucose drink and your energy drink and your whatever.
I also had caffeine before games.
Yeah.
You know, I'd have three little tablets of caffeine, like chewing gum, you know, chew them for a certain period of time. Like, you get into a routine where I knew exactly what I did. I had it down to the final seconds, chewing, and as soon as I ran out onto the pitch, I'd bin it, and it would be done. I wouldn't bin it. I'd bash it away somewhere into a hedge, and then off I'd go and do my my pre-warm-up before we got together with the team. Mm-hmm. And that was just part and parcel of my last, certainly three, maybe more, four or 5 years,
yeah. And would it have crossed your mind, this can't be great for the insides one way or another?
No, I was very conscious from a Diphene perspective. I could never take Diphene on an empty stomach. would absolutely, that would pull you apart, pull your stomach apart. Mm. So I never ever ate, I never had took a Difene on an empty stomach. Always very conscious, and not like, not with a drink in the morning, a glass of orange juice or a cup of coffee. You'd need to eat and then make sure full. And then I'd never had an issue. But it's always something that stayed with me. If I'd have some Difene in my golf bag now, mightn't take one, you know, before I tee off, but if I stiffen up out on the round, I might take a Difene. So I didn't have to go to any other GP. My old man was at home. Not that he was gonna, he was far from one to hand out drugs or nonchalantly, but I suppose within the Leinster and Irish setup at that time, they were accessible. You could get your hands on Difene.
Is that less the case now?
Yeah. I think you've got to fight your case a little bit more and prove the necessity of having them.
All right, so we've had a big response to Brian O'Driscoll's comments last night on the use of painkillers and anti-inflammatories. It's clear it's not just an issue in rugby, but in pretty much every sport. Michael Meehan, the former Galway footballer, is on the line. Evening, Michael.
Hi, Nathan.
You suffered more than your fair share of injuries during your career. Would you have been a regular user of painkillers?
They definitely were part of what I needed to do in the latter stages to cope and deal with the injury that I had, and just to get out on the pitch, you know, as often as I needed to be able to participate at a fairly high level.
Yeah. Was it just then for training, for playing matches, or was it almost just to get through day-to-day life?
No, it was very much, you know, tailored to the matches or the training load that was coming ahead of me. And what I will say is, you know, the medics that I was involved with were very keen to stress. It was they were trying to manage it as well as possible, and I suppose limit as much as possible the amount of Difenes and things like that were taken. But it would have been just, you know, if you knew there was a big session coming up, you target, okay, we have to get something in the system for that. If it was a lighter session, you know, you'd maybe wait off and not take part. Excuse me, or just not, you know, not bother with the painkiller, and then for matches again, you would have been getting them into the system just to kind of bring you back up to a level where you felt you needed to be at to go out and compete.
You had a lot of troubles, particularly with your ankle, but before those issues really started, when you would pick up the general run of the mill niggles that intercounty players and elite players are going to pick up. Was that something that you would then rely on painkillers again if there was a big match? Was it something that would be accepted that you would just have to take to get you through it?
Not overly in my experience. You know, I definitely, you know, there's a scattering of lads in every panel, be it club or county, who would have, at different stages, you know, had to get a few in the system just to, you know, to kind of to help them, essentially. I know Brian O'Driscoll, I heard what he said about it, and you know, as he was kind of saying in his latter stages, and certainly I think it was, if you took a straw poll across the dressing room, it was the guys who had more miles on the clock that generally had to go down that route.
Right.
But I don't think it was. I didn't see any huge kind of evidence of you know, over the top use in my experience.
Yeah, because I remember Dunnick O'Callaghan talking before as well about sitting in a Worcester dressing room as one of the senior players and not feeling it right that the 18, 19, 20-year-olds were looking over at the old guys popping all these pills to keep themselves going, and that the younger guys would feel, well, this is what we have to do to keep going as well. You don't feel that actually the younger players who are in the dressing room are sort of been overly influenced by what they're seeing?
I wouldn't have thought so. But, you know, I was that younger fella in the dressing room, and youth is a wonderful thing because you know, a lot of things kind of, you can deal with a lot more stresses in your body and recover an awful lot quicker. So there was times when you would have been throwing your eyes at the elder lads around you and kind of saying, "Christ, you know, that's never going to be me," sort of thing. But I wouldn't have said that you know there was any pressure attached to that. But it comes with the territory, unfortunately. And like, different people will have different opinions on it. For me, it allowed me to maybe get from 67% up to maybe 80-90% of capacity. You know, whether that's enabling me to perform or enhancing me to perform, you know, there's a huge debate around that. And it's very, I suppose, subjective. Everyone will have a different take on it. But, you know, it's interesting. It's across all codes, and it always was, and certainly is in GAA. You know, maybe every much and maybe more. What I was saying to JP earlier was, like, for a lot of my time with county panels and that, I was, at a young age, I was still maybe one of the more senior members, just based on the demographics of the group. And I think it certainly is age-related and maybe more so mileage-related. Mm. So, you know, squads of players where you have lads, you know, with a lot of miles up, and just, you know, it would have been, well, it probably is the norm for them just to kind of get a dietrein in the system and let it work away, and it, you know, they'd obviously do a job for you.
And just remind us again of the nature of the type of injury that you were dealing with. Would it simply not have been possible to play in a big game with that injury without a painkiller?
It's hard to know. It's a bit like, you know, going into a game where you'd love to have two more weeks training. Mm. You know, a big game, and just come, you know, normal, someone else come back from an injury or sickness, and you'd love to have two or three more big sessions done, just to know that you're that bit more prepared and that bit more ready for it. So it kind of gave the same level to me and maybe to others, that, you know, you're just knowing that you're able to maybe just push the boundaries a little bit more. I did need it. I do remember I did need it at times, you know, very early on after my cartilage injury in my ankle. It was very much just pain-driven and pain-orientated, and depending on pain levels, I could or could not train or could or could not play. So if there was dicing, I suppose it has different names, but essentially that's the painkiller or the anti-inflammatory that most would have taken, I suppose most sports people take, and it just helps. And I will say it was always under the caveat from the GP, there's a certain amount of daily limit that you were allowed to take, and, you know, they were never thrown around willy-nilly or anything like that. So there was a certain measure on it. Now, that said, you can get dieting or something similar on holidays in Europe or in the States, and you can bring back as much of it as you want. So it's very hard to know what is going on in the background day-to-day in individuals' lives, you know, either as a professional or as an amateur in the GA world.
Yeah, and over the course of your injuries then, how long a period of time would it have been that you wouldn't have been able to play games without taking some form of a painkiller? Would it have been several years?
It kind of was, just for me, and a couple of injuries that rolled one into the other, and I probably missed the guts of 2.5 years and only played, you know, a game or two in that time frame. But I suppose the reality of it is that if you're getting ready for a big training session, you know, long before you might ever come to playing a game, you know, you're taking a painkiller to, you know, an hour or two beforehand with food to allow yourself, you know, the little bit extra for that training session. So it wasn't just confined to games or games build up. But it would have been over, you know, a couple of years on and off. But, you know, it wasn't something that, yeah, you know, I didn't, you know, it was very much a case where just I knew I had to take these. I didn't necessarily want to take them. Or, you know, I didn't want to be taking too many of them, but at the same time, there is a certain amount that you can kind of get into you, and, you know, it's not going to do you any harm long term.
Yeah, you'd know side effects or anything.
No, nothing. You know, nothing that no one else has. But, you know, you don't go taking those things on your stomach, you're gonna regret that decision.
Yeah, and is it something that's spoken openly about in GAA dressing rooms with the medical staff, that they're very much on top of this, trying to get as much awareness as possible amongst the players of what is safe? Because, as you say, part of the problem here is you can either get it over the counter or players can go off on holidays, and there's only so much that the doctor will know about.
Control, yeah.
Yeah, but is it something that you sense that there was always a bit of a conversation going on between the doctors and the players, so that they have a full understanding of what players were doing?
Yeah, it certainly would have been very open, and there would have been a lot of transparency, you know, in and around everything you do. I suppose it sort of overlaps or dovetails a little bit with the drug testing, and just being clear on what you're allowed and not allowed to take in that regard. And, you know, it also dovetails in with the dietitian or the nutritionist, because, you know, huge emphasis has come in on that in all sports in the last, you know, 10 years anyway. And there was always a case by, you know, someone like myself, you would have been sat down for an extra session or two with them, trying to identify well, like, naturally, what can we do to help prohibit inflammation? So, you know, there's certain changes you can do to your diet that that allow you to, you know, get more natural anti-inflammatories into the system as well. And so there was, you know, there were all those kind of overlapped in together.
But and would you have been always putting pressure on the doctors to do whatever you could to get on the pitch?
I would, to the point where I felt comfortable with it myself, you know. I kept things, you know, realistic. You know, from this point of view, I've often gone onto a pitch when I know I shouldn't have, but it wasn't, and that was just to do with an injury, probably hadn't been right to go onto the pitch, but it wasn't because I was or were not, you know, taking in anti-inflammatories to get over it or not, you know. So not in that instance. It would have been, you know, there's a certain amount of the decision that can be taken out of your hands as well by management and by the medics, especially, I'd say even more so since I've finished up, because it's just, you know, there's a big group there. There's always, nowadays, there's always a game coming. You know, if you miss a game, there's another game coming pretty quickly, be it National League or even, you know, the championship season rolling into the Super 8. So, you know, sometimes you have to kind of, you know, play the long game a little bit. That mightn't have been as much the case in the past when you had the old school championship. You know, you're straight knockout and, you know, everything was riding on one game. You know,
you didn't find that overwhelming pressure to push yourself then from management?
Possibly was. It was before I never played in the straight knockout, but you know, that's only fair to kind of assume that might have been there.
Yeah, Michael, great stuff. Thanks a lot for taking the call. I guess the other side of it is the ethical side, where, as you said, if you're at 60 or 70% and you're brought up to 80 or 90%, is that performance enhancing? Like, that's the bigger question, I guess, that's probably going to come to the forefront over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think so. And I've heard lots of journalists and lots of discussion that, you know, this is not today or yesterday that this has come to the forefront. And, you know, everyone has a different opinion and a different take on it. And I suppose, you know, in my mind and knowing what I did over the few years to get through it, it certainly was, in my mind, it was an enabler for me. And everything was legal and within the required dosage amounts, etc. And it just got me over the line to kind of, you know, to get to a position where I was able to, you know, get playing with Galway again for a few years. Maybe, you know, I never, let's say, not took them when I needed to. So if I hadn't have taken them, maybe I still could have got very close to that. I'll never now know. Yeah. But the general consensus was, because I do actually remember doing, you know, different things with the physio when I was coming back from injury, and there would be times when you wouldn't always go for anti-inflammatory before training, or you might just take something very, very basic. And, you know, there was trials like that to see what worked and, you know, what did we need to take. So in my case, it was managed quite well with the staff that were there. But there's a huge conversation, there's a huge level of subjectivity to it, and enabling me to perform, you know, in someone else's eyes or for any other player and in any code, someone might deem that as, you know, totally irresponsible and totally, you know, no place for it in the sport. But, you know, I don't know the right or wrong answer to that.
Yeah, sure. Michael, thanks a lot for taking the call.
Cheers, Nathan.
Yeah, that is Michael Meehan talking about his use of painkillers, and very honest stuff from Michael Meehan there with all the injury problems he's had over the last few years. We're going to talk to Enda McGinley shortly as well, former Tyrone player, but now working as a physio and treating a lot of injured GEA players and a lot of injured sports people. So worth getting his take on this. A lot of text coming in on 53106. Will you and the rest of the media wake up and smell the caffeine tablets? O'Driscoll stated last night that it's hard to get Difine now. In Spain, you can buy a bucket load and fly home, says the Walkinstown Beckenbauer. I think we touched on that there, and we'll definitely touch on it with Enda McGinley as well. And interesting conversation on painkillers. I spent most of my life cycling and never took anything, but did Ironman this year and took Difine before a race and in the second transition. Really didn't think I would have gotten through otherwise. I'm 40 and feel it's age, which was a major contributor, from Brian. Well, I guess there's two questions even with regards to that. One is, did that enable you to push your body further than your limits, and are you going to suffer some long-term consequences? And also, did it mean that you finished in a better position than other athletes of the same age and same ability who didn't take any Difine? You can answer that question Only your conscience will know, Brian. We're going to take a quick break and then we will chat to end them again.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Okay, so Enda McGinley is on the line. Evening, Enda.
Evening, Nathan.
Former Tyrone footballer, All-Ireland winning footballer, now working as a physio. We've just been listening to Michael Meehan over the past few minutes talking about his stories with painkillers, and very much backs up, I guess, the general sense with sports people that he suffered a lot with injuries. He took them around matches, around big training sessions, and sort of worked out a plan that he would be able to get the maximum effect when he needed that effect the most. Before we get on to your work as a physio and dealing with current players who are looking towards the benefits of painkillers, your own playing career, when you look back on your time playing with Tyrone, did painkillers, did they become more prevalent as your career went on?
I think they were there all the way through it. Like, I think the sports doctors, I was involved from 02 up to 2011, and I suppose the sports doctors had become a real fixture of the backroom team from, I suppose, somewhere through the 90s. So by the time I came on board, the team doc was always there. He usually had a bag fairly well kitted out with various bits and pieces that the team doctor would need, but included in that was your painkillers and anti-inflammatories. And at the start of my career, and it did change a wee bit during it, but at the start of the career, there was this sort of freedom where you could grab a sachet of anti-inflammatories and take them home, and loads of boys at that stage would have been taking the odd anti-inflammatories. If they got any knock at all, they were taking a few anti-inflammatories, and it was just
A bit of a free-for-all.
Yeah, it was just the way it was. The team had a tough time keeping his bag stocked, but I think there was a few changes then during the years. There was a few, obviously, there was a realisation that such sustained use of anti-inflammatories, which were like a footballer's friend back then, wasn't good. There was knock-on health effects. I think people started becoming more cautious then, but at the same stage, during that phase also, injections and the method of painkilling injections, or the method of injections on match days, was becoming much more prevalent as well. So that sort of superseded the ongoing medicating, and I suppose both things were definitely present during my time. I'd imagine there's a wee bit more control of them now within modern day setups, and I suppose there will be a long-term cost for that sort of approach to injury management during my own career.
Yeah, so talk to us then about the introduction of the injections then as time went on during your career. Was that just the advancements with medicine and with technology and with the general professionalism of the GEA?
Yeah, it was all of them combined. It was obviously sports medicine was advancing, and what they could do, knowledge of injuries was advancing, imaging, the willingness to pay money to sort issues out, which maybe in the past were just like the likes of a sore hip in the past, or sore groin in the past. Well, a player just had that. So during the 90s, the player just had that. They might have got a bit of physio, they might have got a bit of treatment, but there was no real sort of cutting edge stuff. During my time then, there was increasingly sort of various types of injections were possible, various types of scans were possible. We became much more aware of the issues at source of these things, and there was a lot of attempting of use of injections. Steroid injections became popular. There's sort of a lot of misconception or misunderstanding of the use of steroid injections. I don't think any doctors will be using them unwisely, because they're certainly something that can be very unwise to use in certain injuries, but there'd be a lot of sort of pain management injections, sort of simple anti-inflammatory injections or simple painkilling injections being used right up to today.
Why would a player need a steroid injection?
So a steroid injection will be where you have a chronic injury. So it's not suitable for an acute injury. Steroid will essentially almost stop the natural healing process. So, for example, take a sprained ankle. A sprained ankle in that acute phase, it actually needs that inflammatory process for it to heal. So the inflammatory process also brings with it the symptoms, the pain and the swelling. So you ice it to sort of dampen them. Anti-inflammatories will sort of put a cloak over it and dampen it down a wee bit, whereas a steroid injection would almost stop that inflammatory process in the place. That would take away your symptoms, but it would also stop healing, which obviously with a fresh injury, it still needs to heal. Mm. Wind the clock forward maybe 6 to 8 weeks, the healing process will pretty much be completed with that ankle. Plenty of footballers' ankles will have ongoing grumbling of pain, and it's just sort of a chronic type pain, a chronic type inflammation in the ankle. At that stage, a steroid injection could be considered because it'll dampen down or it'll take away those remaining pains in that ankle, at least for a period of time. Whereas in the initial phase, it wouldn't be suitable. But repeatedly, you'll have patients on your table or patients approaching you. They have a big match coming up. They've got an injury. They want the diagnosis of the injury. And then the inevitable question, can I play with this? And if I can't, can I get an injection so that I can play with it?
And what do you say?
it depends on the player. It depends on the match. No, it'll go back to, again, the knowledge of the injury. So various injuries can be managed various ways. You certainly wouldn't be undertaking the likes of steroid injections without sort of further investigation, the likes of imaging and that there. And then the biggest question the health professional has to ask themselves is, what's the risk of further damage here? And I suppose those of us that are from a football background will weigh up that risk of further damage with the level that the match is at and the level that player is at. And that might sound as if you're taking risks, but if there's only a small risk of further damage and this is a massive, maybe career-defining or a game for that player, well, then you're going to have that discussion with the player, explain the risks, explain the potential benefits. Players probably try to deny the risks. So when we're speaking to them, or certainly for me, if I'm speaking to them, I'll be very clear about them risks. And then you discuss, obviously, with the team's doctor or whoever's going to be administering the injection. But you certainly have to have that conversation. Players are very, very keen. If you offered a player an injection to take away the pain, they'll play all day. But quite often, it's just not suitable.
And how many times a year would you be giving that type of injection?
Again, it depends on the injury. I've known of players that for each round of their club championship, they have required...
Sorry, so this is just for club players. This isn't even for inter-county players.
this is club. Well, look, the issue with that is the club players will hear of county players getting injections, and that's all they hear. They just say, oh, that player got an injection, they got to play. So it's very much part of the culture, part of the mindset. All right, if you have injuries, injections can help you play with them. Now, there's a lot more nuanced. It's the clinical reasoning is much more nuanced than that, obviously. But that's still the mindset for clubs. And for clubs, come senior championship time, for key players, particularly within them clubs, or for even the other players that have put in a whole year's effort and are making that club senior team, they will take the risk and seek out some sort of way to allow them to get over that white line to play the game. And I'm well aware of club players this year that have won championships, and each round of their championship, they've taken a painkilling injection to get through that game, and then taking it for each round of the game. So that would be fairly common, I'd imagine, at the club level, never mind at county level. Potentially even more prevalent at club level, because county level is a much more professional setup. Club level boys will just seek anybody to do anything to get them over the line.
And for those players that are getting those injections every fortnight, every month for these big club games, like what are the side effects? What are the short, medium, long term effects?
Again, it depends on the injury. As long as that patient has had it appropriately investigated, usually an MRI scan to rule out some types of injuries that if you were injecting them, you'd be masking potentially serious and life affecting damage. Or maybe they'll have a consultant opinion to sort of say, no, this is safe to proceed with this. I think that's key. And to be honest, I'd be pretty confident that anybody, any medical profession that's given injections, we're all pretty well bound by codes of ethics and professional conduct. So
yeah, because I did want to ask you about that, because I was wondering if you had any concerns at all about the advice that players were receiving, because I think often doctors and medical professionals are seen as being above scrutiny in conditions like this, that, as you say, they're morally and ethically, they have an oath, they've made an oath, but that there's huge pressures, even in the GEA, even in an amateur game, from management to do whatever it takes to get the player on the pitch.
There's huge pressure, and the people that feel that most is the players themselves, and they'll do whatever it takes to get on the pitch. So they certainly are trying to be very persuasive, but to be honest, I would trust any qualified medical person, any qualified health professional to still make that call. Like if this person's at risk, then I don't think they're going to proceed. The problem is the black and white ones are the easy ones. Most injuries, to be fair, land in the shades of grey, where it comes down to sort of informed consent, and the players will tend to take the risk and they'll tend to ignore maybe some of the long-term costs. And I suppose that's how much do you play on the potential long-term costs, which you have to be a slight bit unlucky to suffer, but they are there. And I think the age of the players in the past, you do pay for it when you're 40 and 50 years of age, much earlier than the natural aging aches and pains set in. Players in their 40s and 50s that have been through plenty of injuries will certainly be aging quicker in terms of their joints than maybe they should be.
And from the players that you're seeing at the moment, are you getting any sense that they are overdoing it when it comes to painkillers?
I think there is a disrespect for the potential long-term impact, or there's a refusal to maybe acknowledge the long-term impact. But that's maybe true of any 20-year-old in terms of any aspect of their life. They'll tend to go out and enjoy themselves. They'll tend to do risky things. And in terms of sport, which they're putting so much into, it's in the here and now that counts. And look, I've been in that dressing room. I suffered a shoulder injury one time, and that thing I was saying about steroid injections, you shouldn't have them in the acute phase. I had a shoulder injection done 10 days after injury because of an Ulster final coming up in 2 weeks, and I knew I just needed rid of the pain, and I pushed and got the steroid injection. So plenty of players will still do foolish things at that time. There will be a long-term consequence, but I think it's all part of this education process, and sports medicine has completely changed in the past 10 years, never mind 20 years. And I think the current players are much wiser. I think a lot of the stories that we've seen this past sort of week or two about the medicating and that, a lot of it is coming from players that have retired or at the later stage in the game. And my gut feeling is that a current player, I think it would be happening to some extent, but I think it would be more controlled.
I guess when you're talking about steroid injections or cortisone injections, that these are procedures that are going to take place with a medical professional. So there's a certain amount of guidance and there's a certain amount of safety involved there. The problem with a lot of painkillers, and with your regular Panadol or ibuprofen or whatever it is you're taking, you can get it over the counter, or as Michael Meehan was saying, if you go off on your holidays, you can come back with as many of them as you want. That there's maybe a lot of self-medication going on that we simply don't know about.
That's the issue, and I remember, I'll not name the particular teams I was involved in, but it wasn't too long ago where the doctor arrived, there was a training camp, and the doctor arrived with a fully kitted out bag. He had just refreshed his supplies of anti-inflammatories and all that there. The boys caught wind of it, and not in a theft manner or anything like that, but the bag was there, and they just took into it like a swarm of insects, and the doc came back, all his anti-inflammatory supplies gone, all the boys away with one or two sachets each of anti-inflammatories. And that was just them. They're just good to have. They're something to have in the house. And I'd imagine most players would be in a similar boat, particularly by the time you hit your mid-20s on, where you hardly ever go out on the pitch feeling completely ache-free. So, yes, it's that home medicating or self-medicating that I think there needs to be further control on, or at least further education on, that boys know the risks and know the potential consequences of what they're doing.
Whenever you mention steroids, automatically people think PEDs, that this is a performance enhancer. And that is the big question around this as well. Ethically, what is a performance enhancer, or what is a performance leveler? That it brings you back to the level you should be at before you suffer the injury, rather than adding something extra to your game. Yeah. Where do you stand on those injections ethically, and where it fits into sport and Gaelic football?
Ethically, for me, there is a performance enhancement, because you're not playing with pain. If you've got an injury, that would mean that you're playing through that. It's probably not so much, I suppose, a performance enhancement. It's more getting you back up to your normal level, rather than maybe playing subpar. In terms of the ethics for it, again, I'd be very confident in any health professional or doctor in that situation. They're only giving it for the right things. County team doctors are well aware of the need to note down everything that players are taking, because they are, if they are drug tested, then there needs to be a record of all medication that they're taking. That again is where the home medicating is a wee bit of concern. In terms of the ethics for players for getting it, players aren't looking to do it to from a performance enhancement point of view. That I would have zero concern from that end of it. They're doing it through the sheer desire to play a game of football or to be there for their team if their team needs them in a championship match, and you'll see that at club and county level. So I think ethically and morally the players are doing it for the right reasons. I would trust the healthcare professionals to be doing it with the right reason. I think in a team sport, the overall performance enhancement of any of the medications I've seen being used, it wouldn't be a huge area of PED as you say.
Yeah, I guess the big question over it is that we seem to have come to a situation where most sports people, certainly most GAA players, rugby players, soccer players, that they almost see painkillers now as a necessity of to be a top level athlete. It's just part of your day to day existence.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I would go back to that thing of from sort of mid-20s on, when you've sort of picked up a couple of knocks and some of them are more long-term and they're pretty difficult to shift, and you've tried resting them and you've tried rehabbing them, and you just realise there's a certain level that you're going to go on ahead and manage. And part of that management regularly will be that players will take sort of, as Michael Meehan was talking about, know when to be taking the painkillers, know when to be taking the anti-inflammatories. They'll also have their mobility program. They'll also have elements of rehab. They'll have specific warm-up routines, and all of that sort of goes together to keep that player on the pitch. And that's just really the level that the game has got to at the minute. Mm. Where probably in the past you could play, if you weren't 100% or if you were a wee bit stiff, you could probably still manage. But the pace of the modern game and the mobility of the players in the modern game means if you're not at full throttle, it's pretty easy to be exposed. So I think the way the modern game has moved on means them aches and pains are probably needing managed more than maybe in the past, and we have now greater methods of managing them, and they're being used probably sometimes wrongly, but usually with the best of intentions.
And thanks a lot as always for taking the call.
No problem, Nathan.
We'll take a quick break.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.